on House Bill 2355, 2359, 3303. After that, there will be a work session on the following bills. 2911, 2067, 2387, 3098, 2590, 2592, and Senate Bill 87.
Bill 3303. Representative Bunn is here to testify on that bill. Representative Bunn.
God, I can't find it in all this mess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For your record, my name is Stan Bunn, and I represent District 29 in the House. I have indicated to the chairman that there are other people who are interested in this bill, but they specifically will not be here to testify to streamline the process. In the 1985 session of the legislature, a bill was passed to give parents of handicapped children a tax credit of $85 in addition to the normal credit. And it was envisioned that a number of those with children with problems would be covered by that bill, and it was initially anticipated that hearing impaired and visually impaired would also be covered. As the definitions were reviewed, it became apparent that only those hearing impaired and visually impaired that were 6-year-old or younger would be covered by the bill. House Bill 3303 simply makes it clear that that coverage of the tax credit is extended to parents who have children who are visually or hearing impaired, also between the ages of 6 and 18 years old. I've had passed to you a letter from the Department of Education indicating support for the bill.
Okay, Stan, just one question. As you can see, because of my glasses, I'm visually impaired. Now, probably, you know, my hearing is going too. Now, what do we mean by that? Okay. We don't just mean children that are wearing glasses.
No. There are specific definitions that qualify those children for specific special treatment where they have to have hearing aids, they have to have special glasses type situations, and there are in the definitions that are used categories that classify the special needs.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Buck? No questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative?
Would you repeat, Dan, what year that bill first passed? Was 85?
1985.
It was 85. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the only other comment I would make is that I hope the bill might have expeditious consideration.
Well, I'm going to try to give it that, Stan.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other witnesses on 3303? None? Move into work session on 3303.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford.
Mr. Chair, this bill goes to revenue then? Does it? Does it have a subsequent referral?
Gordon. Does this bill have a subsequent referral to revenue? You've got the sheet on
that. Check my file. Yes, it does have a...
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Fire referral to revenue.
Thank you, Gordon.
I'll move House Bill 3303 to revenue with a due pass recommendation from this committee.
Okay, Representative Ford moves 3303 to revenue with a due pass recommendation from this committee. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative French.
Aye.
Representative Gold.
Aye.
Representative
Shipwreck.
Aye.
Aye.
May I? Aye.
You want to cast a vote on this bill?
That's 33.
You think it's good?
Yeah.
Aye.
Okay, House Bill 3303 is sent to revenue with a due pass recommendation. We'll open up the public hearing on 2355. And Ruth Shepherd. Welcome to the Human Resources Committee, Ruth.
Thank you very much.
My name is Ruth Shepherd, for the record. And my address is 1765 East 26 in Eugene. And I'm here to testify on behalf of the Advisory Committee on Elderly Healthcare, which was connected to the Interim Healthcare Committee. This is one of the recommendations that came out of that group. And also to testify on behalf of United Seniors in this bill. Central question here, I think, is a policy one. Does the state encourage families to purchase service for frail elderly persons before those people deteriorate and become nursing home patients with a high probability of becoming Medicaid eligible? Here are some of the problems that this amended bill addresses. And I should tell the members, Mr. Chairman, that you have in front of you, I believe, a hand-engrossed amended bill, House Bill 2355, the explanation for its change at the outset before testimony is that, frankly, there was just slippage in the staff work between the interim committee and the beginning of this session.
So Ruth, before we go on, I want to make sure everybody has that amended version of 2355 in front of them. Everybody has?
Hand engrossed?
Yeah.
Dash one.
2355-1, hand engrossed. Everybody has it?
This would be the one, Mr. Chairman, on line 13A, start section 1, new.
Right.
I'll be speaking exclusively to those amendments. The amended bill addresses certain recurring problems, which I'd like to outline before I do a little bill analysis, if I may, and we'll be very quick about it. Although it doesn't solve each of these problems, we believe that it addresses certain elements of them. Medicare covers some short-term medical needs in-home after hospitalization, but there are virtually no policies which provide coverage for costs of private adult daycare, foster care, homemaker or housekeeping, or respite care in-home. People are uncovered. Although most in-home care is provided by family members, occasional paid respite care is very important to sustain the caregiver's ability to continue. The highest risk group for nursing home admission is the older old female who lives alone. Most private pay patients who enter nursing homes spend down their assets and become Medicaid eligible within 7 months. Oregon seniors have found the present statute, this tax credit statute, to be inadequate. I should reference the fact that it does not really provide an incentive for the payment of services, but more for the purchase of materials like food and clothing. Finally, we find that it's inevitable that the state will face a growing number of older old persons who are Medicaid eligible in nursing homes. That is as certain as the sun will rise tomorrow, and it is a train that's moving toward this legislature rapidly. And part of the reason for introducing this bill is that we think we can relieve some of that pressure. This is what the amended bill would do, in fact. It does not provide tax credit if the care is provided free of charge or by a family member or friend. I need to start out with that exclusion. It does make it a little more feasible financially to pay for care that's appropriate and to continue independently without direct state assistance. The amended bill would provide as much as $1,000 credit on tax or 20% of the costs incurred, whichever is less, for the purchase of the specified services. The services which could be purchased under this amended bill with the assurance of a tax credit are adult foster care, homemaker or housekeeping services, or respite care provided in-home. The bill also excludes persons who are paying for nursing home care and persons who are receiving aid from Oregon Project Independence or Medicaid programs accepting food stamps. Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the proponents had intended to provide credit, such as described here, for all families regardless of income. Inadvertently referenced in the statute, however, it seems to confine the credit as proposed here in these amendments to those at 17,005 or under.
Yes.
Representative Carter has a question for you.
Can you make the distinction between foster care and adult foster care and foster care?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carter, adult foster care is that, that care established in the state of Oregon, in which there are five or fewer unrelated adults cared for in a residential setting. And your question asked about it, the distinction between daycare?
No,
foster care.
You have in your report, with assurance of tax credit, adult foster care and foster care. Oh, is that just a typographical error?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm very glad you pointed that out. We are distinguishing the services of adult foster care, adult foster daycare, I mean, adult daycare is what it should say, Representative Carter, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. The amendments, I think, are correct. So we are talking about covering those two services among others, which would be the daycare and the foster care.
Thank you.
Finally, in support of this bill, I'm sure you're aware by now that most older people despise and fear the impoverishment which comes to certain frail older people who need care, and they would much rather be given credit and an incentive and continue private payments one way or another out of pocket than to receive services paid by the state. And people who can eke out the payments, and that's the best expression for what's happening at those marginal ends of the financing, those people who can eke out those payment for services are much less likely to become Medicaid dependent in nursing homes if we can continue them where they were with this incentive. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Frank.
Why is it are people excluded who are paying for nursing home care for someone else? This can be a pretty devastating expense.
Representative French, Mr. Chairman, we feel that it would be a possible incentive for inappropriate use of nursing home care. We are questioning state policy which would provide an incentive without some kind of screening that would assure the state that it was an appropriate placement, because we are finding so many Medicaid dollars being spent now in nursing homes. That number is growing, and growing partly because private pay patients are admitted, they spend down and become state dependent. We think there's some prior issues for state policy in the nursing home area, and so we excluded it for that reason.
Ruth, don't we have several bills in the process that deal with the pre-screening before people go into nursing homes?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do. They may well be coming to you soon, as well as some insurance issues that pertain to this question. It was excluded purposefully, I could say, Mr. Chairman, because of the question of that almost leaky sieve of admission to nursing home by private pay patients that very soon become Medicaid eligible, and then because many of them are there inappropriately, are relocated, or they've become so dependent that indeed they are going to be long-term nursing home patients.
So the point on this, if I understood Representative French's question and your answer, the point on this area is that what we're trying to do here is give a financial encouragement to keep people out of nursing homes. The reason you've excluded nursing homes is to make sure that we're not adding an encouragement to put people in there that would be inappropriate for them.
I think that's a fair summary, and thank you for it.
Representative Van Moon, I believe, has a question.
My question, Mr. Chairman, is this. When a person is in a nursing home, is there no tax deduction for that if they have been screened and said that's where they had to be, similar to a medical deduction? Is that not available?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Van Moon, there is no tax deduction, of course, for those persons who are Medicaid eligible, and there is no screening at this time for private pay patients who are admitted to nursing homes.
So it's...
Okay. Ruth, do we have other questions for Ruth? Now, does this bill have a subsequent referral to revenue also?
No, actually, I believe this bill
does not.
It does.
Look at my file here.
The other one has.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
It does, yeah. Representative Ford.
Are we in work session?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'll make sure there's no other questions. Okay, why don't you just stay there, Ruth, in case there are some questions during work session. We're in work session. House Bill 2355. Representative Ford.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the amendments that are before us. House Bill 2355-1, Hand Engrossed.
Okay, Representative Ford moves the Hand Engrossed amendments to House Bill 2355.
Mr. Chair, I have
Representative Van Loo.
In the wording, and we're dealing with this Hand Engrossed 414 one, in lines, well, it starts up in line 13B, and then going on down through line 13G. Does that say what we want it to say? It says a credit against the taxes otherwise due under this chapter shall be allowed to an eligible taxpayer who pays on the taxpayer's behalf or on behalf of a qualified individual. Isn't that a little bit awkward there? Who gets it? The person whose taxes are being paid or the one on whose behalf the taxes are being paid? Does that really say what they intended it to?
No. Let me read it again.
Taxpayer's behalf, I thought.
It would be either the taxpayer or the taxpayer's family. Whoever is doing the pay
whoever's
for
paying.
The taxpayer.
Well, whose taxes are we talking about and whose money did it come
either,
out of?
Mr. Chair?
The way I read it, Representative Van Loon, you know, I may be wrong, but whoever pays it gets the credit is the way I read
that's
it.
Right.
And that, I believe, would be this committee's intent, and if you wish, you know, we can send a note to revenue that have their revenue experts take a look at that language and make sure it does accomplish the intent we're talking about.
Well, I think there's room for some legal something there, so I wanted to get it on the tape that we questioned that
and I appreciate
language.
That.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Abrams.
I believe that the witness pointed out that these amendments are still do not meet the original intentions of the sponsors, in that as I read it, inadvertently referenced a statute which confines credit to those at 17.5 or under, and I wonder whether it is the intention to fix that with an additional amendment.
You're going to have to run that by the chair again, Representative Grounds.
Oh, it isn't fixed in this.
No, it's defective, at least, and if you intend to meet the original intentions, it requires additional amendment, as I understood the witness.
Okay.
If you look on the second page of the testimony given by Ruth Shepard, there's a place with an arrow and an amendment, question mark, and I believe that if the committee wishes to follow through on what was originally intended, that an additional amendment is required.
Okay, so the policy question, as I understand it, you know, with the additional amendment would be whether we just allow people at $17,500 to take the credit or any family. Is that the policy decision?
That's as I understand it, Mr. Chairman. That's right.
Okay.
And as it is currently written, is limited to those $17,500 or less.
Let's take Representative Ford's amendment as it is and then deal with that second policy question as a separate amendment.
Fine.
Okay, is there any objection to Representative Ford's moving to adopt the amendments as indicated in 2355-1?
Pardon my ignorance, allow me to ask you another question. If we were to accept her adopted amendments, and does that mean that we are not considering the suggested amendments that she might have? Okay.
No, we'll take that as a separate policy issue. If there is no objection, then those amendments are accepted. The chair is open to additional amendments.
You're accepting which amendment now?
2355-1, the Hand Engrossed Amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Abrams,
I would like to move an additional amendment that and I have no idea how it needs to be worded, or but apparently placement is required in another statute, and that would make eligibility available regardless of the level of income, and not just confined to the 17.5 and below, which I understand was the original intention, but fell through a crack, so.
Okay, well, what we can have is, if we adopt that amendment conceptually, I can have Gordon take that conceptual amendment to legislative council, have that engrossed into the bill before we send it to revenue.
Fine with me.
Is there?
I have no problem.
Okay, so the.
Ms. Shepherd, I think, has some information for us.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, there is some question on the part, on our part, about the referencing statute. We know that it would give credit only to those taxpayers whose incomes are at 17.5. We think it may also include the payee whose income is at 17.5, and we are unsure of that. And I need to have you know that as you proceed, because there are apparently two mechanisms at work here. The eligibility of the person receiving services in terms of that person's income, as well as the person who, the taxpayer who's paying for the service.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
It would seem to me that if those, both of those limitations are in the present bill, that it defeats the main purpose of the bill.
Exactly right.
And that as a matter of policy, the committee should direct legislative council to check out appropriate statutes to be sure that if additional amendment is needed to permit to remove the income requirement or any income limitation for either the payor or the payee, that is the committee's intention.
Mr. Chair,
okay, just slow down, folks. Let's go with Representative Pickard first.
It just occurs to me that this is getting a little frayed.
Yeah.
Would it be possible for us to make a determination for this to come back to us shortly in its proper form? We send quite a few things to other committees, and sending them is bad enough. Sending them flawed, frayed, and tattered would not be my first choice. Have I overstated the condition of this particular measure?
Well, you might have overstated it a bit, in the chair's opinion, but see, that's why we have a revenue committee that deals regularly with these little complexities in the revenue language. What we can do, and I think that, you know, I the chair will take that as a friendly suggestion that we do is we take, before we have any action on 2355, even though these amendments were drafted by legislative council, I don't believe that they were drafted the way they should have been, and go back to legislative council with the two policy decisions that we're talking about here. And if I understand the first one that we've adopted, what we want is the money, the credit, to go to the person who pays the bill. That was the one policy decision that I believe we've already voted on. I believe the second policy decision that we need to make, and there may be others that I haven't picked up yet, is do we want it to go to those people regardless of what their income level is? And if we vote on that, then we'll also send that to legislative council to make sure that the bill is drafted correctly with that policy decision. Representative Agrons, was there a third one also?
No, it was also that there should be no income limitation on the part of the payee as well as the payor. There's a potential problem that the income limitation might apply to both the payor and payee, and neither of which is our intention.
Not payee.
Yes, well, I believe that Ms. Shepherd said that.
Recipient of the care.
Yeah, that is the payee. No, the payor is the person who pays. The E is the one who receives.
Okay, but you also have a third person. Yeah, all right.
Okay. In any case,
I understand what you're
both ends of the equation. And I would like to briefly, if I may, Mr. Chairman, issue some syrupy words to my colleague over here, to the effect that we don't have time to be perfect anymore. I mean, we're at that frantic stage. This bill, if it's going to have a life, has not only got to clear this committee, it has to clear the revenue committee, it has to clear the Florida House, it has to do the same bloody thing over on the other side.
Okay.
Time is running out. The sand is running out.
Well, hold on.
So if we don't do these kinds of things...
Whoa. Representative Agron...
We may very well lose a lot of good legislation simply because we're trying to be perfect.
I Representative Agron, I appreciate your comments to our colleagues.
No more.
At the same time, I think that I can have Legislative Council have these amendments for us on Friday, so we can get the bill out on Friday.
Whatever the chair's desire.
But, you know, I think that overall you're right with that particular philosophy. Representative Van Loon.
Mr. Chair, going back to what we've been talking about here on the person who pays, I think to make it abundantly clear, we want the person to be the person whose money pays the bill, out of whose funds this goes, rather than necessarily the person who pays. And it may take one, Gordon is agreeing with that, but it may take, I mean, I paid the bills for my in-laws out of their funds. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's a handy little situation you've got there.
They're gone long since. But, we've made it sound like the person who paid the bill, and I think the understanding was out of whose bank account it came.
I think the revenue department would... take care of that issue if we tried to get around it.
But then the latter thing here, if I'm understanding correctly on the payee and the payor or something, it looked to me like you were letting the tax credit be for both, for two people. Is that what we're saying here?
We're talking about a single tax credit.
Well, that's what I thought until some discussion down here.
Well, no. What Representative Agrons was pointing out is that if you talk about the income level, in other words, we may be talking about somebody whose income. All right, let me try it. Let's say my mother.
$30,000.
All right, let's say my mother. Okay, my income is, let's say, $50,000 a year. My mother's income is $20,000 a year, or it's $10,000 a year. All right, do you count? If I'm paying it, do you count my income?
Oh, okay, I got it.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
I'm glad you got it, because I was getting confused.
Do you need a motion to put this off?
Yes, please. Well, no, I need a motion for the policy decision on what we do with the income levels. Do you want to stop the tax credit at $17,500, or do you want some other income level, or do you want income level to be irrelevant to you receiving the tax credit?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
I like
French.
The latter. That would be irrelevant.
Okay, Representative French moves the amendment concept that the income level should not be considered as a factor in granting this tax credit. Okay, is there any objection to that? If not, then that policy decision is accepted. Okay, Gordon, we won't move the bill to revenue until we've got the amendments from Legislative Council, and let's try to get them by Friday. Okay,
we'll do.
Thank you. Okay, we'll close the work session on 2355. Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.
And we'll open it on 2359. And let's see, I've got a couple of folks signed up for 2359. Pam Edens and Ruth again. Ruth? If I'd have known that, Ruth, I would have just had you stay there.
I have an Alzheimer's disease. I need the exercise.
Welcome, Pam.
Thank you. I'm Pam Edens. My address is 2505 Northwest 144th in Beaverton. I'm the Oregon Alzheimer's Disease and Related Disorders Advocacy Coordinator Volunteer. During the interim, I had the opportunity of working with several members of this committee on the Elderly Needs Task Force. And as we deliberated on many issues of need, many recommendations came out regarding insurance. One of those recommendations has to do with a hospitalization waiver that does exist in some or most long-term care insurance policies. The recommendation is that waiver does not benefit the person buying the insurance policies, because you're not guaranteed that you're going to be in the hospital before you need to go into long-term care. Therefore, the recommendation is that any hospitalization waiver that exists on a long-term care insurance policy should be deleted within the state of Oregon. That should be a policy made in our state.
Okay, Pam, before you go any further,
sure.
Could you just in real simple terms explain what the bill does, why the bill is necessary?
The bill is necessary because many...
First of all, tell us what it does.
What it does is eliminates hospitalization waivers that exist in some or most insurance policies. And that hospitalization waiver, most of them use, say, 3-day hospitalization necessary before long-term care. Therefore, for the insurance policy to be